It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, October 24th, 2022, I'm Mike Emanuel. Republican leaders are aggressively campaigning in places like New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, typically Democratic states, but GOP officials believe they have a much stronger message than Democrats on inflation, crime, illegal immigration, and education, arguing Democrats don't get it.
Democrats who have been in charge in Washington, D.C., their arrogance of thinking that they know better than people on Main Street all across this country is what's going to cost them.
I'm Lisa Brady. We get a cosmic view of human divisions.
To show you what this world looks like when you open your eyes to other ways of seeing things.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
With about 2 weeks to go until midterm elections, the final push is underway to convince the American people to turn out and vote. Polls suggest voters favor Republicans on inflation and the economy. At the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre offered this defense of Biden administration policies.
Our plan is to make sure that we are protecting American families, that we are lowering costs, and we're going to continue to push that message and make sure that the American people hear directly from us.
But some voters suggest President Biden and his team are out of touch.
Biden has been really out of touch with the heartbeat of the nation. I think that there's a very big disconnect between what the Biden administration cares about and what the normal American normal American people care about.
In border states like Arizona, illegal immigration is a red hot issue where Sheriff Mark Daniels says change is needed.
I don't foresee President Biden or those around here, senior policymakers, changing anything right now. He's made that very clear. I mean, we know we have a challenge with the cartels, these criminal cartels, totally absent any conversation in Washington, D.C.
There are also education voters who believe COVID lockdowns hurt their children, losing out on a lot of valuable learning time.
When you try to do school on a computer and you're a kindergartner, what else are they going to do? I did everything I could. I made the bouncy balls. I made the special room. I sat there and I worked with them, and they still cried.
Now Republicans are trying to play on offense in places like New York, where George Santos is running for Congress.
We just need to be common sense and have honest discussions about what's going on. And we just can't allow the distractions from the Democratic Party to hurt the messaging that the Republicans have.
Soon it will be up to voters to decide the balance of power in Congress.
I'll tell you what, I've been to Rhode Island, New Jersey, Connecticut, South Carolina, North Carolina, New York, in South Texas last week. And each one of them has its own energy.
Minnesota Congressman Tom Emmer is chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, leading the effort to win back the majority in the House.
South Texas was amazing. We did an event for Cassie Garcia in Texas 28th District in San Antonio, Mike. And she's like a rock star. You had people showing up on this corner telling you stories about how they'd voted Democrat forever. They're voting for Cassie and they're voting Republican from this point forward.
I'm struck by some of the places you rattled off. Northeast, typically blue states. I've heard some of your colleagues are really bullish on a lot of districts in New York in particular. What do you make of that?
The election, as you and I have talked about in the past, is we refer to it as a security election, right? It's about your economic security. People in New York, just like everywhere else in this country, are being faced with very difficult decisions about whether to buy groceries and how much they cost and what they can put in the gas tank and all kinds of tough economic decisions because of these failed economic policies by the Biden administration and Democrats across the country. And then it's physical security, Mike. You look at New York City with cashless bail and this defund the police nonsense. The crime is out of hand. And people, the energy on the ground is related to those two issues primarily. People, I had one person in New York anecdotally say to me, This is an Upper East Side liberal, said while they were burning this city down and looting everything, not one Democrat said anything or did anything. Unacceptable. I think that's what you're feeling on the ground. That's what you're hearing. And that's why we've got so many opportunities.
Prominent Republican leaders, including yourself, have said Democrats don't have an answer to key issues like inflation. If Republicans win back the House come November, how does the GOP plan to directly address these issues?
Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to restore American energy independence, Mike. But look, I don't want to get into the details, with the exception to say that this is why Kevin McCarthy put out the commitment to America. Mm-hmm. Because we do have a value proposition. A vote for a Republican this fall is a vote to get the cost of living under control. It's exploded. Why has it exploded? Because one, they killed our energy independence. Two, they just keep printing money and spending money. And three, they don't have a plan for how they're going to get it under control. The second reason you're voting for Republicans is because you want to get this crime wave that they've created through cashless bail and defund the police nonsense. You want to get that under control across the country. People deserve to be safe in their homes, in their communities, Mike. And then third is getting the border under control. You've got 300 Americans a day dying from this fentanyl crisis that's coming. It's flooding across our southern border. And this administration acts like there's nothing wrong. So some very specific things that we can do immediately to draw attention, raise awareness, and try to get this administration to start getting on track.
We've seen since COVID conversations around education and parents' rights being really hot topics and really animating voters in some places like, for example, Virginia. You've also been placing focus on the student mental health crisis in our country. Can you tell me a little bit about your work on that front?
You know, Mike, I think we learn more every day about the damage that this shutdown's putting these kids at home on a computer, not having the social interaction. And then when they did allow them back in school, forcing them to wear masks the entire time when they weren't the ones that were at risk. It's had a significant effect, not just on children. It's had an effect on the adult population. But if you look at our kids, especially when it comes to their mental health and their progress in education, both have been severely impacted. And I think we've got to keep our eye on that, make sure that we're addressing it as we go forward. Because again, we know it's there, we've seen it already, but the full extent of it, I think we're going to be realizing in the weeks and months to come. And just going back, Mike, if you think about what the Democrats are running on, they don't have an answer for cost of living that they've caused, the explosion. They don't have an answer for the crime situation. They don't respond to the problem at the border. And when it comes to parents, they seem to have an attitude that parents should not be allowed to be involved in their children's education. Quite frankly, that is a hot topic because parents not only should be involved, they want to be involved. They want to understand what their kids are learning, and they want to make sure that their kids are progressing the way they should. And you're right. Virginia is a classic example. Not only the election of Glenn Youngkin involved this issue, but there's several House seats that are going to be in play because of it.
I'm wondering, in your role as NRCC chairman, the guy who's in charge of getting the majority back for House Republicans, when you got what you feel like is a great opportunity to win, you feel strongly about a lot of these swing districts, are you like, I wish Election Day were just here already?
I could have told you that any time over the last 4 months. But it's really, you know, we had a little tightening back in August. Look, the real game engages after Labor Day. What we've seen in the last 4 to 6 weeks, Mike, is a significant shift back to Republicans as people start focusing. Again, the issues are the economy, the cost of living. It's getting crime under control. It's the border. It's education. These are the issues that Republican candidates are talking about all across this country. And Democrats don't have an answer for any of them, and they're not even talking about them. Because of that, I think you will see people stand up, cast their vote, be counted. You're going to see Republicans take over the House, and I believe you're going to see Republicans take over the Senate.
If that happens, what does oversight look like with a Republican Congress or Republican Senate? What are some of the major issues do you think that various committees will dig into as they provide a check against the Biden administration?
It's a great question. I mean, first, you got to have a policy track. We talked about that a little bit. I think Republicans should identify the 3 to 5 issues that we're going to prosecute the case over the next 24 months after the election and tell Americans you elected a Republican president and a Republican House and a Senate in 2024. These are the things we will do immediately to make this country a better place for everyone. But then you also have to have this significant oversight that hasn't been done now in the last 4 years. There's been no oversight. I think the first place you got to start looking very heavily is at Mayorkas in the southern border. Why hasn't he been doing his job? 300 Americans are dying a day from the fentanyl crisis, and he's doing nothing. You've also got to look at some things that have happened in the past with this administration. We've got to get on top of Gary Gensler at the SEC, the CFPB. All these different executive agencies have got to be held accountable. Congress has to start doing its job again, Mike, and we're looking forward to that. But first, you got to win an election.
I'm wondering your reflections on this job as NRCC chair. You're a Minnesota-based congressman, so you're back and forth between Washington and your home district every week, and then you take on this job and you're traveling literally all over the country. How interesting of an experience has it been for you, and are you glad you took the gig?
Well, yes, it's been a very interesting experience. You know, I'll just give you a snapshot of the last few weeks of this. Not only have I been doing the job serving my constituents here in Minnesota, but we'll have been to 20 states over the last 2 months, Mike, and done fundraisers for over 70 candidates and members. Obviously, we're making sure that we're doing whatever we can to help our candidates get across the finish line. But what it's done for me, when you say is it an interesting job, it renews your belief in this country. People are showing up. And I think Democrats who have been in charge in Washington, D.C., their arrogance of thinking that they know better than people on Main Street all across this country is what's going to cost them. Not only do they not have answers for the things that Americans are dealing with right now, the challenges Americans are dealing with, but they have this arrogance that they know better than people across this country. And that's not the way the system works, Mike. So the job's been great from all the people you meet. But more importantly, just the feeling on the ground that Americans are definitely aware, they're waking up to the fact that this is their country, this is their government, and it needs to work for them.
I've spoken with your colleague, Elise Stefanik, who's the House Republican Conference Chair, as you know. She's talked about the diversity of the people you have running this cycle. Is that possibly changing the look, the feel of the Republican Party going forward with these new faces with wide and diverse backgrounds?
You know, it's funny. When I got this job 4 years ago, you heard people talking about we have to diversify in the Republican Party. That bothered me, Mike, because I already knew that in my state and across the country, we are the more diverse party on Main Street. Not only do we have a diversity of ideas, but we have a diversity of people that come from all different backgrounds, you know, and cultures, et cetera. I think the job was making our conference, the elected officials in the House of Representatives and in the U.S. Senate, but obviously our goal was the U.S. House of Representatives, making it look and sound more like the districts that we're representing. And we assign this to the members instead of, you know, having consultants and others who always weigh in on these things. We turn it over to our members to tell us who are the best people in your backyard. The result has been astounding. Last time we set records for the number of women that not only ran but were elected, we more than doubled the women in our conference. You've got candidates from this time. We've got a record number of women again. We've got a record number of Hispanic candidates, a record number of Black candidates from all different walks, Asian Americans. I do believe we are achieving what we set out to do, which is not just being the most diverse party across this country on Main Street, but being showing that diversity with our elected members in Congress. And you're going to see that after this election even greater.
Congressman Tom Emmer of the great state of Minnesota, enjoy the final weeks of the campaign, safe travels, and we'll be following it.
Thanks, Mike.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
NASA calls it humanity's first planetary defense test.
And liftoff of the Falcon 9 and DART on NASA's first planetary defense test to intentionally crash into an asteroid.
That was in November of last year, launched with a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from a Space Force base in California. And last month, the crash actually happened.
7 million miles from Earth, and it came in at 14,000 miles an hour. And it was a bullseye.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson declaring the mission a success after a few weeks of analysis, saying they did change that harmless asteroid's trajectory.
If an Earth-threatening asteroid was discovered and we could see it far enough away, this technique could be used to deflect it.
He says they showed the world NASA is serious as a defender of this planet.
So first of all, it should have happened decades ago. We should be way deeper into this Save the Earth plan than just only starting it in the year 2022.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is an astrophysicist, director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History, and author of the new book, Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization.
The DART mission, the Double Asteroid Redirect Test, is an attempt to test a deflection scenario. You know, unlike the way we've all been trained looking at films with Bruce Willis in them, like Armageddon, where let's blow the sucker out of the sky. That's a very sort of militaristic attack on a danger. But while we may be good at blowing things up, we're less good at knowing where the parts go afterwards. So you're way better off deflecting the asteroid, especially if you get to it early enough. Then a tiny little deflection just accumulates, right? You move it like 1 centimeter per second to the left, and it just will keep drifting 1 centimeter per second to the left. You get it early enough, it'll drift the entire width of Earth so that it will not collide if it otherwise had us in its sights. So,
I mean, it still leaves a trail, right? In this case, thousands of miles long, because you smash into it and you're still breaking some pieces off. But I guess we're less concerned about that.
The smashing wasn't to destroy it. The smashing was to nudge it. The little bits, the pieces that fall off, those would just burn up harmlessly in our atmosphere. Those are not what you need to worry about.
That's reassuring.
Yes,
very reassuring. The NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says they turned science fiction into reality with this test. Sounds like describing it in a way people who aren't scientists can get excited about. Is that something NASA should do more of?
Yes, NASA does have a very strong PR arm, but they can't advertise themselves just as a government rule. We see the military advertise themselves, but technically, if you look carefully at those ads, they're recruitment ads. They're not, we're the Army and we're great, be nice to us. It's we're the Army, be one of us, join us. So what NASA could do, but I don't think they do, is create a recruitment ad the way the military does. And that way they get to extol the virtues of what they do as part of the commercial. And at the end, say, become a NASA engineer or scientist, or just work any capacity at NASA and be a part of that adventure. So that's the difference here. But yeah, I think the power to Administrator Nelson to reference our Hollywood science fiction attempts to get this done. Now we're doing it for real.
They have had a series of delays, though, for the first test flight of the new NASA rocket that's supposed to bring humans back to the moon and beyond. First, an engine cooling issue turned out to be a sensor issue, then a liquid hydrogen leak, then the most recent delay from Hurricane Ian. Would these technical issues be considered routine or expected for a project of this magnitude?
We have gone to the moon before, but not with this rocket configuration. And a reminder that the first two or three of these launches will be uncrewed. So that's the start. So yeah, I'm glad they delayed. I'm glad they found something. I'd rather they found something before launch, delayed it to fix it, than to not find it before launch and have it explode. Let it take as long as it needs. I'm not in a hurry. It's been 50 years. What kind of a hurry are you in? It's been 50 years, for goodness sake.
Are we destined to militarize space? Is that inevitable at this point, space warfare at some point?
Well, when that phrase is uttered, we think of Star Wars and laser bullets and Death Stars and this sort of thing. Consider that space has been militarized since the beginning. That's what spy satellites are. Yes, yeah, some might be launched by the CIA or the NSA or whatever, and not by the Army. But spy satellites is the militarization of space, period. We've been at it for 60 years. Now that we have a space force, now you're thinking about this, okay? Well, what do you think GPS is? Now you find the directions to grandma's house to avoid traffic on the weekend using GPS, which started as a military project. Oh, by the way, this intersection of military and scientific and cultural, quote, benefits goes way back. But I wrote a whole book on this called Accessory to War, The Unspoken Alliance Between Astrophysics and the Military. It goes back to Galileo and his telescopes, showing it to the Doge of Venice from the clock tower so that they can know the flag flown by a ship. Is it enemy or is it friend 10 times farther away than they otherwise could? The Doge bought a bunch of telescopes from Galileo. Then he could look at the universe in his spare time. So yes, I think it's inevitable. It's the new high ground, and we've been doing it ever since we've been in space. It's not a new question. It's not a new challenge. It's not a new moral problem. Let me put it that way.
You have a way of seeing things from a different perspective. Is that where your new book, Starry Messenger, comes from? Maybe wanting to walk people through that and help them see things from a different view as well?
Oh my gosh, it is completely that. Oh my gosh, you just gave the entire commercial for the book. We can stop now. you just said in fewer words than it would have taken me, exactly the mission statement of that book. I'm not there to hand you an opinion. I'm not there to jostle you loose from whatever are your ideas or feelings about the world. The role of the book is whatever are your feelings, try to make sure they're as informed as can be. And often, our own opinions are the greatest source of our own bias. So the book is an attempt to show you what this world looks like when you open your eyes to other ways of seeing things. That is the cosmic perspective. When you ascend, look back on Earth, and national borders dissolve, and you say, wait a minute, there's a line there, and you need a passport to cross that line. Why? Because, oh, the other country worships a different god, sleeps with different people, or has a different skin color, has different distribution of resources, so we have to be enemies. Aliens coming to visit Earth, here they come, they look at her, oh, that's beautiful, oh, look at that, land and oceans and clouds. And they get closer and they find out one species has divided up that land and fought wars over who lived on what side of any line in the sand, or who lived on what side of a mountain range or of a river. And they say, what are you guys doing? Why? Oh, well, look how different they are from, what? You're all Homo sapiens. The aliens would run straight back home and declare there's no sign of intelligent life on Earth. Yes, we're part of the same species. Not only that, we have strong genetic overlap with other species of life on Earth. Just keep context there. One example I give, again, I just want you to be better informed. That's all. And if you're a scientist, you try to find out what your own biases might be. You're looking for bias in others, and you try to not have bias. Because if you have bias, it is an inaccurate understanding and interpretation of the objective world around you. And how are you going to make decisions that are properly informed about your own health, wealth, or security for your loved ones or anything else you do in life?
You do have a quote near the beginning of the book from Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar D. Mitchell about the view from the moon and how petty international politics look from up there. And you say at one point, the world doesn't revolve around us or our opinions. What feedback do you get from people when you put things in perspective in this kind of a way?
Well, the title of the book, Starry Messenger, comes from Galileo. He wrote a book, Starry Messenger, 1610, 1609, which had his first observations of the sky with a telescope. And so why did he call it Starry Messenger? Oh, my gosh, because he was discovering things that was changing our perspective and our understanding of our relationship to each other and our relationship to everything else on Earth. But yes, Copernicus had said maybe Earth is in the center of the known universe, but nobody had good data yet until he put it on the table. So this, the star is telling us that you are not you are neither the figurative nor the literal center of the known universe, as was previously held, not only by general population, but by the Catholic Church. It was a very important religious tenet that this be true. And so these are messages, you have to contend with that, because it's objectively true. Yes, I guess you can still live in a delusional world, but be self-aware, because decisions you make, as I said earlier, might not be in the interest of your own survival if they're not based on something that is foundationally true. So this cosmic perspective, which was captured brilliantly by Edgar Mitchell, and I want to thank his daughter for giving me permission to use, he died a few years ago, to use that quote. He goes out and he says, you see Earth from a 250,000 miles out. You want to grab a politician by the scruff of the neck and say, look at that, you son of a bitch. Okay. Can I say that? I don't know. Can I say that? It's a podcast, right? And so you read it and you just feel anyone who reads it feels the same way, that there's stuff going on Earth that just looks so petty and so pointless, that this cosmic perspective has the power to reset, rebalance, reinterpret everything you thought fully justified why you hate another person walking by you.
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson, astrophysicist, director of the Hayden Planetarium, author of Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization. We always appreciate your perspectives and your insight. And thank you so much for your time.
I'm happy. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I was screaming at you for parts there, but that's where it's just coming. You started it.
You're passionate. It's a beautiful thing.
The universe is a passionate place. So I'm just living in it like the rest of us.
Thank you so much. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday.
A tax fraud trial against former President Trump's company is set to begin in New York City. Prosecutors say the Trump Organization and its longtime chief financial officer engaged in fraud by awarding off-the-books perks to senior executives. The former president has rejected those claims.
Tuesday.
WNBA star Brittany Griner is expected to appear in a Russian court to appeal her 9-year prison sentence for drug possession. She was convicted earlier this year after police say they found vape cartridges containing cannabis oil in her luggage.
Wednesday.
Israeli President Isaac Herzog will meet with President Biden at the White House. Also on Wednesday, 9 McDonald's locations in Louisville, Kentucky will launch a test program of selling Krispy Kreme donuts. Customers will be able to choose glazed, chocolate iced with sprinkles, or raspberry-filled, individually or in packs of 6.
Friday.
We'll see the start of Major League Baseball's World Series. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
Well, they keep falling one by one. First, Sam B's Full Frontal on TBS. Then the Trevor Noah version of The Daily Show on Comedy Central. B has already been canceled. Noah soon departing. Hardly anyone will notice their exits, however, as B was having trouble attracting even, checks notes, 300,000 viewers to her show. All while Noah can't even draw 400,000 on most nights. For context, Jon Stewart averaged 2.5 million viewers on The Daily Show. Meanwhile, Donald Trump continues to be front and center on the broadcast late night shows. It's hard to find a monologue on Stephen Colbert's show or Kimmel's or Seth Meyers without the former president out of office for nearly 2 years, mind you, being the target. If only we had a gaffe machine providing copious amounts of comedic material sitting in the Oval Office at the White House. Oh, wait, that's right, we do. President Biden recently saw dead people and asked for them by name at a public event. And Colbert and Kimmel and Fallon and Myers wouldn't even touch it. And now there are reports that the insufferable Seth Meyers may be moved to MSNBC or to the network streaming service. That's called a demotion. The fact is that the only late-night host seeing any gains in real success is Fox's Greg Gutfeld. Unlike the others, he's unpredictable, and his guests are authentic without being politically correct. Wow, what a concept. Either way, late-night talk shows have become extensions of CNN and C-SPAN. If they go down or their time slot is diminished, they only have themselves to blame. We are a long way from Johnny Carson. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at guybensonshow.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.